Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the people sitting here in church. Welcome to those joining us via the web camera. And welcome to anyone who happens to listen in at a different date later on. It's lovely to see Stephen back with us, who has had a serious operation. And we hope Bill is joining us via the web camera. He's not going to be reading for us in person, but Will will explain to you why. We begin with our opening words. Amid all the noise in our lives, we take this moment to sit in silence, to give thanks for another day, to give thanks for all those in our lives who have brought us warmth and love. We give thanks for life itself. We know we are on our pilgrimage here, but a brief moment in time. Let us open ourselves to the process of becoming more whole, of living more fully, of giving and forgiving more freely, of understanding more completely the meaning of our lives here on this earth. And we light our chalice with these words. We kindle this flame to honor and remember those who have lived in whose footsteps we tread. May their brightness live in our vision. May their courage live in our commitment, and their love continue to bless the world through our deeds. We have our first hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 20, Be Thou My Vision, O God of My Heart. Hymn number 20. We gather in this place of peace, where countless generations have gathered before us. Put aside your busy life and let the quiet enfold you. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become wholly ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of our being, which is common to all humanity and all living things. We come knowing that at times we have not lived up to the best we can be. We come knowing that we are hurting and have caused hurt to others. We have acted wrongly simply because we are human. We evoke the presence of great compassion. Let us fill our hearts with compassion, compassion for ourselves and towards all living things. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to others and to one another. With humility, with awareness of the value of life and of the sufferings that exist around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts, in our worlds. Amen. Now, instead of us saying words that aim to articulate our congregations here, we're going to have it sung by the choir. Will is going to read for us this morning.
Good morning, everyone. The observant amongst you will realise I'm not Bill Darlison. Bill has had internet issues this week. He was hoping to join us via the miracles of technology on Zoom So I don't think he's actually watching the webcam today, but he may be listening back during the week on the podcast when the internet comes back. Bill has chosen this reading. It's a beautiful reading. I hope I do it justice. It's by a writer called Geraldine Edwards, and it's called The Daffodil Principle. And Bill, just to say, because if you're listening back, because you can't see on the webcam, the church is packed today. And I'd say it's in no small measure due to the fact that people were hoping to see you either on screen or in person, perhaps. But we look forward to seeing you in person soon. And Bill asked me to convey his thanks for the well wishes and the cards that he has received and flowers throughout the last few weeks as he faces the illness he has, but we wish him well and look forward to seeing him soon. So enough out of me. This is the Daffodil Principle. Several times my daughter had telephoned to say, "Mother, you must come see the daffodils before they are over." I wanted to go, but it was a 2-hour drive from Laguna to Lake Arrowhead. "I will come next Tuesday," I promised, a little reluctantly, on her third call. Next Tuesday dawned, cold and rainy. Still, I had promised, and so I drove there. When I finally walked into Carolyn's house and hugged and greeted my grandchildren, I said, "Forget the daffodils, Carolyn. The road is invisible in the clouds and fog, and there is nothing in the world except you and these children that I want to see bad enough to drive another inch." My daughter smiled calmly and said, "We drive in this all the time, Mother." "Well, you won't get me back on the road until it clears, and then I'm heading for home," I assured her. "I was hoping you'd take me over to the garage to pick up my car." "How far will we have to drive?" "Just a few blocks," Carolyn said. "I'll drive. I'm used to this." After several minutes, I had to ask, "Where are we going? This isn't the way to the garage." "We're going to the garage the long way," Carolyn smiled, "by way of the daffodils." "Carolyn," I said sternly, "please turn around." "It's all right, Mother, I promise. You will never forgive yourself if you miss this experience." After about 20 minutes, we turned onto a small gravel road and I saw a small church. On the far side of the church, I saw a hand-lettered sign that said Daffodil Garden. We got out of the car and each took a child's hand and I followed Carolyn down the path. Then we turned a corner of the path and I looked up and gasped. Before me lay the most glorious sight. It looked as though someone had taken a great vat of gold and poured it down over the mountain peaks and slopes. The flowers were planted in majestic swirling patterns, great ribbons and swathes of deep orange, white, lemon yellow, salmon pink, saffron and butter yellow. Each different colored variety was planted as a group so that it swirled and flowed like its own river with its own unique hue. There were 5 acres of flowers. "But who has done this?" I asked Carolyn. "It's just one woman," Carolyn answered. "She lives in that property. That's her home." Carolyn pointed to a well-kept A-frame house that looked small and modest in the midst of all that glory. We walked up to the house. On the patio, we saw a poster. "Answers to the questions I know you are asking," was the headline. The first answer was a simple one. 50,000 bulbs, it read. The second answer was, "One at a time, by one woman. 2 hands, 2 feet, and very little brain." The third answer was, "Began in 1958. There it was, the Daffodil Principle. For me, that moment was a life-changing experience. I thought of this woman whom I had never met, who, more than 40 years before, had begun one bulb at a time to bring her vision of beauty and joy to an obscure mountaintop. Still, just planting one bulb at a time, year after year, had changed the world. This unknown woman had forever changed the world in which she lived. She had created something of ineffable, indescribable magnificence, beauty, and inspiration. The principle her daffodil garden taught is one of the greatest principles of celebration. That is, learning to move forward toward our goals and desires one step at a time, often just one baby step at a time, and learning to love the doing, learning to use the accumulation of time. When we multiply tiny pieces of time with small increments of daily effort, we too will find we can accomplish magnificent things. we can change the world. It makes me sad in a way, I admitted to Carolyn. What might I have accomplished if I had thought of a wonderful goal 35 or 40 years ago and had worked away at it one bulb at a time through all those years? Just think what I might have been able to achieve. My daughter summed up the message of the day in her usual direct way. Start tomorrow, she said. And just to say, that daffodil garden exists, and there are directions to it, and it can be found in California.
So we, as usual, have a children's story. And this is a once upon a time story. And it's about a youngish man who was a teacher. And he was a really, really good teacher. Wasn't just good at imparting knowledge about his subject. He absolutely paid complete attention to every child he taught. And they all loved him. And one day this young man, this wonderful teacher, was going through the airport and he saw an older man coming towards him. And he realized that the older man was his old school teacher. And it was a teacher that he really liked. And because he really liked him, he wanted to talk to him. But he was a little bit embarrassed about approaching the old man. And I'll tell you why in a moment. But he took his courage in both hands and he went up and said, "Hello, Mr. whatever his name was. I'm Johnny so-and-so. You taught me at school." And the old man was delighted to see his old pupil. He greeted him warmly and asked him what he was doing with himself. The young man said, "I became a teacher. I thought you were such a wonderful teacher. I should try and be a good teacher as well." And he said, "Why did you think I was a good teacher?" He said, "Well, of something that happened in our class at school." And this is what he told the teacher. He said, "Do you remember one time there was a stolen watch? Somebody stole a watch in the class." And he said, "Oh, yes, I do. I remember that all right," he said. And the young man said to him, "I stole that watch." He said, "My friend was given a present of a watch and he brought it into school and I just so wanted that watch. I knew my parents could never afford to buy me a watch like that, but I really, really, really wanted that watch. And one day," he said, "my friend left it down and when he wasn't looking, he said, I stole it, I put it into my pocket." And he said, "Within a short period of time, my friend missed his watch and he told you, the teacher." And the teacher said, he said, "You told us that you would go outside the classroom and whoever took the watch could leave it back and nothing more would happen about it. The matter would be closed. So you went out, you came back in, the watch still wasn't put back. I was determined," he said, "to keep that watch. But then you said, we can't have this watch just disappearing like this. I want every one of you to stand in a circle." So all the classroom, all the boys stood in a circle. "Now," he said, "I want you to close your eyes. Everyone must close your eyes. And when you have your eyes closed, I'm going to search your pockets." And that's what happened. All the boys closed their eyes and pockets were searched. And the teacher found the watch. "You found the watch in my pocket," he said. The teacher said, "Yes, I remember." He said, "I thought you would tell the whole class who had taken the watch and that I'd be embarrassed and really feel rotten. I couldn't imagine myself coming back to school. But," he said, "you never told anyone. You just said the watch has been recovered and that was it." He said, "From that day on, I decided I would never steal anything again. And I wanted to be a teacher, a good one like you are." And the teacher said to him, "I remember that incident, but," he says, "I didn't know who stole the watch. Because when I put everyone in a circle and searched the pockets, I closed my eyes while I was doing it." Sometimes we want vengeance and things like that. And sometimes being discreet really, really does work. We're now going to have our second hymn, and it's hymn number 107. It's not familiar to us, so Josh is going to play it through and then we're going to sing it. hymn number 107. My reading this morning, I have read fairly recently in the church, and it's by Luca Bloom. But when I read it the first time, I thought, do you know what? It's worth talking about the idea of surrender. And I decided I would use it again this morning. And I was very surprised, one of those Bill moments, because there was a thing on the radio about U2 bringing out a new LP, a new album. LP, that gives my age away, doesn't it? A new album, and it's called Surrender. And you know, Bill is very friendly here. He sang in the church here during lockdown at a funeral. It's my claim to fame. He sang here with just Kevin and I one day, which was wonderful. And he has a beautiful voice. Surrender. Peace. It's a great little word in fairness. It's like love. And often they come together, peace and love. I want peace and I want it everywhere. Peace of mind is the greatest gift of all. But it can seem like a luxury item in a world where there is so much work to be done. If I'm sitting quietly in meditation or playing music, shouldn't I be out in the world easing suffering? If I'm reading a book, shouldn't I be doing something more useful for the world? Finding peace is a struggle. Why? Because of another word, shame. How can I be at peace when climate change is upon us? How can I be at peace when there is so much inequality in the world? Shame blocks peace. In my case, the issue was which rendered peace so unavailable was alcohol, the sorrow and sadness accompanying it. The road back began a long time ago, but addiction of any sort is a resilient foe. The shame and the blues that come with addiction linger and find new ways to permeate the mind. with all this potential for chaos, depression, etc., how do you find peace? The toughest mountain to climb is the fact that during my life, I have caused hurt to others. This can grab my mind and hold me in a vice-like grip. It can own me for a day, for a week, and guarantee me no peace. Shame. This is for me why peace is elusive. And yet peace is not unattainable. I find peace sometimes, most days in fact. And as is often the case, my path to peace is ultimately quite simple. And it lies in another word, and that word is surrender. A much maligned word, it is associated with weakness. But it takes courage, humility, and honesty to actually surrender to life. I had to sink quite low to get to the point of surrender, but I did get there. And surrender is now a daily practice in my life. If I acknowledge the truth of my life, I find peace. If I surrender to the mystery of life, I find peace. If I accept the things I cannot change, I find peace. If I ask forgiveness for hurt I have caused, I find peace. If I forgive, I find peace. The path to peace for me lies in surrender, unconditional surrender. I craved control and had none. Now I have no control over any outcome, and somehow peace is possible. I stop fighting myself and the world. At the beginning of every day, I ask that I be kind. And at the end of the day, if I can identify kindness in that day, there is peace for me. I'm not a religious man, but every day I ask the God of my non-understanding to make me a channel of your peace, and then I surrender. For me, peace is not passive. It involves action, acceptance of life on life's terms, gratitude for life itself, kindness, and surrender. Surrender. Peace be with you. So we're going to have, just to say, the very short prayer that is used in recovery programs. Lord, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference. We now have a time of silence, and we're going to have some music to finish. This morning's address is entitled Surrender. And as I said at the reading, it's unusual for me to use the same reading within a few weeks, but Luca Bloom's reading is well worth rehearing. I find it deeply moving that the writer is prepared to be so open with his life struggles. Most of us try to hide what we don't like about ourselves. The title Surrender is so at odds with modern culture. That also strikes me. Because Western culture is based on the premise that we can organize the world. We want a modern health system, a fit-for-purpose education system, good public transport, a home and a reasonable standard of living for everyone. The list of what we want is fairly endless. We believe that if society is properly organized, it will be fair and that we will all be happy. There are, of course, benefits to having a well-run public service. And while a badly run government service may annoy us, a well-run service will not make us happy. While knowledge has progressed over the last few hundred years, we still do not understand many of the elements of human behavior. We don't understand addictions. We don't understand how to properly care for mental health. And indeed, we have no real understanding of happiness itself. We all want to be happy. We have no idea, though, the sure path to happiness. The other downside of wanting a well-organized society, that in pursuit of that notion, we are drowning, and we risk drowning in a sea of bureaucratic red tape. In our brave new world, the individual can often slip through the cracks of red tape because we often abdicate our responsibility to care for one another to bureaucracy. People, and when that happens, people are the losers. A higher pension, fuel vouchers, help with your electricity bill, financial grants have their use. But money in the bank does not alleviate loneliness. It doesn't bring peace. And older people may be able to heat their homes, but only the company of other people generates warmth in life. Going back to that word surrender, of course, the recent history of the northern part of Ireland, with its mantra of no surrender, does not endear us to that word surrender. As the writer pointed out, the word surrender is associated with weakness. But it is also true that to surrender takes courage, humility, and honesty. Luca Bloom is inspired by the 12-step program to recovery that is used in addictions. Surrender is also an essential element of the Islamic faith. And while Buddhists don't use the term surrender, Buddhism is based on the premise that change is the only certainty in life, and that it is our inability to accept change, or to put it another way, to surrender to change, that causes our suffering. In many parts of the Western culture, Islam is perhaps the most misunderstood of faiths. When we hear the word Islam, one of the first images that comes to mind is the Taliban, Ayatollahs, women forced to wear veils, girls refused education. And of course, that is only part of the story of Islam. And that part has been distorted by followers who have become in politics rather than in sticking to the original teachings. And while we may not be attracted to the Islamic faith, I think we Christians need to remember that the animosity between Muslims and Christians didn't originate on 9/11. It goes back 1,000 years to the Crusades and the many other political interventions made by Western Christians mainly in the Arabic and Islamic world. We're very quick to point fingers. We have to remember our history. The Arabic word Islam means surrender. It also means peace. Muslims sum up their faith as the peace that comes when we surrender our life to the will of Allah. Allah is, of course, the word Muslims use to refer to the originator of the universe. We use the word God. Users of the 12-step program turn control over to a higher power. In Buddhism, they teach that happiness is to be found in accepting change. So here we find the same message coming from many different sources. Buddhism, Islam, the 12-step program. The religion that Muhammad taught is relatively simple. It is 5 precepts called the 5 pillars of Islam. The first one is that there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. Muslims, the second one is Muslims pray 5 times each day. The third is that Muslims should give 5% of their wealth, not just income, 5% of their wealth to charity each year. Muslims fast during the month of Ramadan. And if possible, the fifth one is that during their lifetime, that a member of the Islamic faith will make a pilgrimage to Mecca. So they're the basic beliefs of Islam, very simple. Of course, it's when they're expanded that things become more complicated, and when they become involved in politics. As in Judaism and Christianity, in Islam there is one God, no Trinity, and no other gods. And while Muhammad is called the seal of the prophets, Muslims do recognize other prophets, about 240 of them actually, including people like Abraham, Moses, Noah, and they particularly venerate Jesus. And they hold a very special regard in their hearts for Jesus' mother, Mary. What about prayer? Muslims pray 5 times each day, and it is one of the most lovely sights to see is a Muslim at prayer. On holiday a few years ago, I was at a very busy tourist spot, and I noticed a Muslim couple withdraw slightly from the crowd and perform the Islamic prayer. To see 2 individuals so focused among a bustle of holidaymakers was really beautiful. There was a little oasis of peace that they created when they took a few moments in their lives to find God. Just a few moments is all it takes, but there was just such a sense of peace around them. So 5 times each day, they draw themselves back to God, what is important. Giving to charity is an obligation for Muslims. It's not an optional extra. And Muslims are encouraged, if at possible, to go to Mecca in their lifetime. The other pillar is fasting, and I'm going to come back to that later. I have pointed out that religions and other sources of wisdom teach us that to surrender to God or Allah or to a greater power or to life, that when we do that, we accept the inevitability of change. And it's only then we find peace. And if we don't have peace, we're very unlikely to be happy. You can be peaceful and not very happy, but you can't be happy if you're not peaceful. Usually you need the peace for happiness to follow through. As this reading this morning, Surrender, points out, peace is not passive. It doesn't mean that we sit in the sun and let life drift by. It doesn't mean that we pay our taxes and expect the government to look after the welfare of people. Surrender means that we are honest about how we live. It is accepting that we have an obligation to care for others. It is doing whatever we can and whatever is within our power to make the world a better, more loving place. And we do what we can and we let go. We don't have expectations about what will follow from our actions. We don't expect thanks. We don't expect recognition. We surrender our expectations about what will happen. And when we make mistakes, which we inevitably will, we acknowledge wrong, the wrong we have done, and do what we can to repair damage, any damage or hurt. And again, let go. I think it's very sad when you hear people talk about, and I did so-and-so for X when they were 2.5 or something. You know, the people who hold on to good deeds. Don't let go. One of the most familiar of the pillars of Islam is the fast of Ramadan. And next Wednesday is the beginning of Ramadan, the first day of Ramadan. The fast for Muslims means that during daylight hours, they don't eat, drink, not even water. They don't smoke. Now, after sundown, they can eat and drink and smoke, but not during daylight hours. Islam is based on a lunar calendar, so it's not a set date every year. The date moves about 10 days each year. So in a cycle of about 33 years, this Ramadan will have passed through the entire year, you know. In countries close to the equator where Islam originated, daylight generally varies very little beyond 12 hours. It might be 11 and a half or 12 and a half, but is very settled. But 12 hours fast without water even in a desert is certainly a challenge for anyone. In 2017, in Ireland, Ramadan straddled the summer solstice. And so for Muslims in Ireland in 2017, the fast would have been about 17 hours long. And after 17 hours without water even, you would notice it. But Muslims accept it. They say it's a blessing from God. They surrender to God's will. And that surrender and accepting willingly to fast is really important. It is not of any benefit to anyone when religious practice is imposed. You know, you're always going to get the one who wriggles out of it, and it is of no benefit. When you think about it, though, at one time, pre-Reformation, fasting during Lent was an essential part of Christianity. The Reformed churches dispensed with fasting because the teaching was that Jesus had saved us, ergo we didn't need to, you know, to fast and do penance. Fasting, of course, will never earn salvation for us, but it does have value. It unites body, mind, and spirit so that for a time even, we are present in the moment and present in our body. We are aware rather than living on autopilot. And awareness will give us empathy. When we experience hunger, when we know what hunger pangs feel like, we will feel empathy. Millions of people in the world have no choice about whether or not they will eat. Accounts of famine and images of children who are starving may prick our conscience. But the experience of hunger can actually impel us to do something about the uneasy feeling we get when we think of it. This just struck me during the week as I wrote this, and I don't know if other people have realized it. This year, Christian Lent, Islamic Ramadan, and the Jewish Passover, the fast the night before the Jewish Passover, all overlap on the night beginning the 4th of April to the light of the 5th of April. So for once, the three great monotheistic faiths have a fasting day in common. I don't know how often that occurs. If we're to add together the numbers of people who claim to be affiliated to either of those faiths, you get in excess of 4.6 billion people, which is more than half the population of the world. Just say we were all to share that day of fasting. Wouldn't it be a wonderful experience? And if we were to share that day of fasting and give what we saved to charity, to the hungry in the world, wouldn't that make a difference? I chose that day, not that we're all going to fast for Lent. I know we don't. We're not Muslims, we're not going to fast for Ramadan. But the Jewish festival, when they fast, is 24 hours. And I think it's something we could think about doing just for ourselves and maybe do some good. I know that call is not going to, made from the pulpit here, it's not going to reach out to the world, but some people are hearing it. In this church, we are free to find wisdom from many sources. When a variety of different sources give the same advice, that's a hint worth taking for us. Don't waste energy trying to change the world. Spend your energy trying to change yourself, to become more kind, and to care for one another, because that's what the world needs. Amen. We are now going to have our third hymn, which is number 281, O God, Our Help in Ages Past. And at the same time, we're having our offertory collection.
Thank you.
our notices. As usual, there's tea and coffee downstairs. Please join us. And Wednesday, the lunchtime service of reflection is 1:05, and it's available in the church and on the web camera. Next Sunday, we're having our book sale, and if you have books you would like to give to clear out of your house and replace them with new books for you to read, this is your opportunity. And chatting after service last Sunday, someone suggested that we also bring some cakes along. Maybe people bake a cake and bring it. And then you can have coffee, cake, and browse books next Sunday. And any money that we raise for that project is going to replace the lighting in the church. It'll be more eco-friendly and easier to maintain. There are two book launches coming up in the church. One is on Sunday, the 2nd of April, and the book is called The Death of Jesus the Jew, and its running title is Midrash in the Shadow of the Holocaust. It's by a writer called Peter Keenan. We're all invited to attend. It's on, in the church after the service. And the other book is Madeleines, which is on Saturday, the 25th of April at 6:30 in the evening. This Saturday, 25th of March, 6:30 in the evening. So two book launches coming up. In May, we're going to have a plant sale, and people are very good. They've brought in some more used butter tubs, biggish ones, or any container like that that I can use rather than going out to buy containers for bedding plants. And in May, you can buy the plants for the church. Again, the money is going to the lights, and then you'll have beautiful flowers all summer long. With what I said in mind this morning, a Christian aid box is on the table up there. If somebody wants to, anyone wants to contribute money, the money goes to Christian aid. And the book club meet on the last Wednesday of the month, and this month's book is Nation by Terry Pratchett. Now, we're going to have our third hymn. It's up there as 298. I didn't realise that it's the same tune as the first one, so we're changing it. It's going to be hymn number 159. This is my song, O God of all the nations. Hymn number 159.
Thank you.
our blessing. May the Spirit of truth and love rule our hearts and minds and guide us to those ways that will create love, peace, and justice in the world. Amen.